Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Blaze Your Own Trail podcast. My name is Jordan Mendoza. I'm your host, and I'm joined by an incredible guest today. His name is Adam Torres, and I'm going to have him tell you a little bit about who he is and what he does today.
Yeah, Jordan, man, I'm so excited to be here. Blaze Your Own Trail podcast. Come on. I've been waiting to get on this show for a long time. I love meeting new podcasters like yourself, and you've built a business. You've done a bunch of things with your show. You built a big audience, and man, I'm just excited to talk to you. So appreciate you having me on, and from one podcaster to another, I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you on as well and give the audience some context. And my favorite part of the show, Adam, is we just kick it off with a rewind. You know, I want to get deep context into my guest's story, into their journey. So if you could share with the audience, you know, where were you born and raised? And what kind of kid were you? What type of things did you get into? Were you more into the academic side? Were you into sports? Were you crazy like me and got into all kinds of stuff? I'd love to just to get some context on the formative years.
Yeah, so we're going way back then. So I was born in Michigan, so Detroit. So I'm a Detroiter, Midwesterner through and through. And growing up, I was kind of always now we use the word entrepreneur, but who the heck knew what that word meant? That's a fancy word for I was just a kid trying to make some money. So I had all my, you know, my little side hustles, my t-shirt businesses, whatever I could do to make some money, selling baseball cards, basketball cards, whatever I could do. But it was a great upbringing in childhood. I mean, we had Little Caesar's Pizza. This is way back when the Detroit Pistons were winning all kinds of championships. You move forward along a bit in my later years and, you know, the Red Wings are winning championships. It's a great upbringing, really. But did I think I'd ever be in media or anything like that? Never. This whole like podcasting, media, anything, I had zero interest in being on TV, in front of a camera, any of that kind of stuff. I was just regular Midwesterner, and I was just out there trying, you know, as an entrepreneur, doing things in my younger years, and then obviously went to college, stuff like that. I see your Oregon, your jacket on. I was Michigan State, so I went to MSU and then moved on from there. But my career really started in finance. Like, that was the base. I had a solid 14-year career in finance before transitioning over into media. So, but yeah, I started in finance, really.
Love it. Yeah, we're definitely kindred spirits. I was that same kid that went to slang baseball cards. I was raking leaves. I was doing telemarketing in high school. I was trying to do whatever, anything that could avoid actually going to class was like my jam. And started a breakdancing crew in 1995. And I was more interested in breakdancing than going to class in high school.
Come on.
That's it. So let's talk about growing up in Detroit. So I had the I don't know if I would call it a privilege, but in 2003 I had this sales job and I got sent up to Auburn Hills, Michigan. I don't know if the listeners have ever been to Michigan in January. It's not warm. I think the high every day was like -1 and the low was like -15 or something crazy like that. So talk about what that was like growing up in those kind of frigid conditions where, you know, nowadays, if you tell people that you had to walk to school in the snow, they probably think it's child abuse, right? So like talk a little bit about what that was like.
I mean, what you don't know. I'll tell you this. You don't know what you don't know. Now I look back and I've been based in LA for a long time now and over 10 years. And I look back and I tell my dad, I'm like, why were we in Michigan? Like, you don't know. You don't know. It's cold, all the other things, but really it was a lot of fun too. Like, I mean, the difference is, you know, right now we're recording this December 22nd for some context. Christmas is coming up. I haven't seen snow, man. I haven't seen snow in so long, Jordan. I don't miss the cold part of it, but I don't, you know what I mean? Like there's different nostalgias about it, but either way, I wouldn't trade it. I'm not going back to the snow. I'm good.
Love it. Love it. So did you get into any winter sports out there? I know that there's like ice hockey is a thing. You know, because it's so cold. Did you get any indie sports at all?
You know, sports, I did play basketball. I played basketball quite a bit, but that was like younger years, not in high school. I played like pretty much 9th, 10th grade. I think my height peaked out in terms of like what I was going to do. And I didn't play too much any sports or anything like that. I actually, speaking of and doing anything to not go to class, I went to school maybe like 2 hours a day. Then I went to work at a brokerage firm called Raymond James and Associates. So they're big out there in Atlanta where you're at. So I think that might even be where their headquarters is at, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that one, but I know they were kind of started or headquartered regionally down there way back when. But I go to class maybe like 2 hours a day. Then I go to the office. I go to the brokerage office and I started in their IRA department and I'd work. So I worked even in high school. So that was kind of like, that took me out of the school thing. That took me out of really everything. But the cool part about that was, well, of course, making money. Like that's a good thing, right? But the cool part is that's like before the tech bubble burst, before 2002. So at that point, the market was, you know, this is 98, 99, going into 2000. So anything, you know, that had .com at the end of it was going crazy in the stock markets. Looking at that, it was a very interesting high school, like having that type of, or that period, having those type of influences and being in that type of environment as really a kid in retrospect, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I'm sure that attributed to you wanting to be a finance major at Michigan State. You got literally put into the reps of what it looks like every day to go in and learn different things.
Actually, no, I didn't major in finance. That's just where my career took me. What I did in college was different. I was speaking of not wanting to do work, but also wanting to have fun. So I was actually international relations. So I was, this is
interesting.
This is, you know, Facebook's just kind of coming out, all that other stuff. Around this time period, or maybe MySpace was out and then it evolved into Facebook, whatever, like around that time period when I was in college. And I traveled, like I was one of the original, just want to travel and learn. So I studied in Mexico and Belgium and Spain and Czech Republic. And, no, I was about that. If I could get on a study abroad trip and get out of Michigan and go see the world, I was in. So I figured in business or in finance, I was like, I'll probably learn what I need to do on the job or later in life. But they say right now is a really good time in your life. So I was like, man, I'm traveling. So I spent a lot of time on the road getting credits, though, by the way, getting credits and getting my degree. So it was like a win-win. Actually, that's even why I picked Michigan State, because at that time, I don't know if it's still the case, but it was it had the number one study abroad program ranked in the country. And they had like, it was insane. It was like, you could just open up a book and go wherever.
I love that. So what part of Belgium were you in?
Brussels. Yeah, Brussels. I studied, we did a bunch of different things there while I was there actually. But yeah, Belgium. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm in Belgium every Brussels, 6 to 8 weeks.
Really?
We hadn't met prior to today, but I co-founded a tech startup that's based in La Louvier, Belgium. It's about 20 kilometers outside of Brussels, about 3.5 years ago. So yeah, so I'm one of the four co-founders. We're building teams, just got some investment money in, and we're partnering with the Belgian government, University of Leuven. We're partnering with University of in Liège and the government and the fire teams. We're building a fire life safety product. So very, very small world, random, right? That's somewhere
awesome,
you went to study,
man.
And I've been building a business there the last 3.5 years. So very, very cool.
That's great.
So what was the favorite country that you visited in your study abroad program?
Spain, Southern Spain, for sure. Specifically like Puerto Banus and that whole, man, I got lost there. I got lost there. You fall in love there. It's just the best. I want to go back now, isn't it? Yeah, no, Southern Spain. It's just being in that environment. It's just something else. And even just like, it was just the food, the everything, the lifestyle, it was just, that's the best to me still.
Yeah. European culture trumps our culture any day of the week. I mean, just being able to go anywhere and eat and not be haggled by people because you can just consume your food and digest your food and have 3 hours of conversation and they wouldn't dare come ask you for your bill. You know, like that's what I love about the culture in Europe is it really, you know, so you don't know this also, but I'm a father of six. So any restaurant that we go to,
you got
to
try, baby.
Our youngest is 16 months. My oldest is about to be 21. So we've got them from diapers to the workforce. But you know, when you go out in the States, everywhere you go is trying to get rid of you the moment you go in. When you go out in Europe, they don't dare to do that because it's more about let's build relationship. Let's actually break bread. You know, let's be able to enjoy our meal. And then let's have maybe we think about dessert because we're going to be there another 2 hours, you know? And that's something that's lost in the States because you don't get that same experience here.
No, that's not happening.
Not happening at all. So let's talk a little bit about college. So you do these study abroad programs, you do an international study, and you end up going into finance at the end of the day in the workforce. So like, what was it about, you know, going and getting all this worldly experience and getting a bunch of stamps in your passport and learning about different cultures, and then you come back and you end up going into finance? Like, what was it about that? Was it the time that you put in high school and you said, man, I have this baseline of knowledge, let me go into this? Or what was it about finance that attracted you?
It really wasn't any of that. What it was is I was accepted to law school. I thought I was going to go into government or something like that. I had some internships, work for some lobbyists that were amazing. And Lansing, where Michigan State's at, or East Lansing's where Michigan State's at, but Lansing's right there adjacent to it. And so that's the capital of Michigan. And what happened is I was accepted to law school. I was waiting maybe like a year, I think, before it was going to like actually start. And I had a buddy that worked at this place called Rock Financial, which then turned to Quicken Loans, which then turned to Rocket now, I believe. So Dan Gilbert's company, for those that don't know, who is owner of Cleveland Cavs, like billionaire many times over. So my buddy worked there and he's like, hey, you know, they're hiring. And I was like, well, I got to do something while I'm, you know, waiting to go start law school. And I started and it was it's a mortgage company, for those that don't know what that is or what Quicken is. But my first month when I was on the floor and out of training, I made something like, I don't remember exactly right now, maybe let's call it like $7,000 in commissions. And I was like, whoa. And then I looked at what I was going to make in my first year of being a lawyer after all these years of going to school. And I'm like, let's say it was starting back then, I don't know, what, $35,000 or something. And I'm like, wait a minute, the math. I'm like, but I just made like $7,000 my first month of once I was out of training. And I'm like, seems like I'm kind of going backwards. So I didn't end up going to law school. I stayed there and I was killing it. And then the company did a restructuring. They changed. And I was like top one or two in the company for anybody that had been there under like 2 years. So I'm on the top of the charts. I'm killing it. I'm winning awards. I'm making a bunch of money. Then the company does a restructuring, which I understand why. They wanted to move their Rock Financial people to the more of the growth engine of it, which was Quicken Loans, which is the online version. But I was fishing my own leads. I was out there doing deals. I was like, and so basically my pay when they moved me over was going to be based on the way that I work and that I sold. And we had to do way more volume to make the same money, but I was generating my own leads. So that's once it was kind of on there, I was like, yeah, I'm not trying to take a big pay cut. So then I ended up leaving, and then that took me further down the finance path. Ended up going out west, started in Phoenix, was out there for a bit, and then for like 5-6 years, and really just, you know, getting into the game there, and worked everywhere from Vanguard Group to Schwab to like you name it. Those are my two big ones out there, and then that Schwab eventually brought me out to California. Like that, this just promotions. I'm getting promotions through the company that eventually took me to California, which I'm at now.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, you move your way through the ranks, end up in California, and you know when you got there, you know, I know you mentioned in the beginning, you know, you had no intention to getting into media or podcasting or anything like that. So talk a little bit about, you know, how long were you in California before things started to shift, and what was it that made you your eyes open to this other potential or these other opportunities?
Well, I eventually left Schwab and I started my own RIA. So during that time, I was starting my own business, and my mentor, he's like, Adam, you got to write a book. And I'm like, man, I'm not writing no books. I didn't understand story. I didn't understand marketing really from the extent that I do now. I didn't understand any of that stuff. So my answer to him was, why do I want to write a book? Broke people write books. Like, what are you talking about? Why do I care about a $5 product, right? So I'm like, I didn't care. It didn't matter. I wasn't like trying to be in front of a camera. I thought people that wrote books just wanted either, if they weren't academic, but like the business people that wrote them, like they just want attention, or I don't know, like it's silly. It makes no sense. So I didn't get it, but I listened to my mentors, and ultimately I was like, all right, I'll write the book. I'll do it. So then I wrote a book. It was called Money Matters. And I just started handing them out as business cards. That's all. So I handed out thousands of books. I brought in millions of dollars in assets under management. and strange things started happening. Other people started asking me, could I help them write books? Now, mind you, this is completely ridiculous to me to this day. And it's funny because I'm in Beverly Hills. That's where I lived at the time. And my referral partners and stuff, they just saw it because I'd hand it to everybody. They're like, oh, I want one too. Can you help me? And I'm like, are you an idiot? You know, I'm a financial advisor. What do you mean I'm going to help you write a book? That's stupid. They're like, but you did it for yourself, so you can do it. And I'm like, I'm not writing a book. Are you crazy? So then, you know, more people started asking me because they saw what was happening. Like, it was growing, and I was on speaking tours as far away as China. Like, it was crazy. Like, so what was happening? And by the way, this is just a regular book, and I just handed it out. So not, in my mind, nothing special, but I started to learn about the power of story. And maybe I had a story that was worth hearing, maybe, or maybe it was just getting to the right hands. Then I looked at all the, you know, me, I'm into finance. So I looked into models and I'm like, well, you know, I'm not to help people write books individually. That's going to probably, I don't know, that just seems like a big waste of time. But I found the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, the ones that I used to like to read growing up. And I was like, oh, if I was to help somebody, maybe I do like an anthology and everybody puts in some money for the marketing, whatever. Everybody throw in a couple grand. And then we pool that money and then we all write one book and put it in an anthology. Everybody gets a chapter. And to date, we've published over 400 people in that best-selling series. In retrospect, I didn't even want to do it. But it worked. It worked. The concept of bringing together like-minded individuals. We'd have parties. We'd do all kinds of stuff. And then from there, the podcast was started to really the other co-founder here, his name's Chirag. He's like, we got to do podcasts. We're going to, you know, have more sales for the books. And I'm like, I'm not doing a podcast. That's silly too. And you notice a pattern here, Jordan. I'm like, I'm not doing that. That's dumb. And then that's probably the thing I need to be doing. So when we started that, man, everything just blew up from there. The demand, the this, the that. I've done over 6,000 interviews. This year, I'll do over 1,500 interviews. And we're in December. So I think I crossed the 1,500 mark so far this year. Next year, I'll do another 1,500. And I host 8 different shows. And I really just found that, to me, podcasting, I'm not putting these words in your mouth. But for me, in the beginning, before I understood anything about this business or what we do or the power of story or what it's like to provide a platform for someone to share their story, I was just like, these are the same calls or the same conversations I'm having with my clients when I was a financial advisor. Like, it was no big deal to me. I was like, if anything, it's like being in a call center. If you're doing it remote, you're just having a conversation, recording it, distributing it. So at the very, very basic of it all, does that make a great show? No, but I'll tell you one thing, even a bad show over time can get bigger. I was the worst podcaster ever to start, Jordan. My first 300 episodes weren't even edited. You could call it tape recordings of Adam having a conversation and uploaded online. That should have been the name of the show, with zero editing. People would be like, Adam, you know, something's off on this. My friends, right? The ones that are like, something's off. Your audio sounds weird. I'm like, really? Listen to the next episode. Let me see if that one's better. They'd be like, no, Adam, it still has kind of like this weird, like, and it's kind of like, listen to the next. Man, I was just trying to get downloads. Nobody was editing those things.
That's it.
Keep listening. Yeah. Let me see. We're going to work with our editors. Do I recommend that today over doing nothing?
Yeah. Yeah. Done is better than perfect, for sure. Always. Yeah. But no, I love it. Right. Because it's just like, hey, it's just a matter of getting the content out, right? Getting an episode out is better than talking about it for years and not doing anything. Right. And yeah, the fact that you were getting feedback meant that they were listening.
Yeah.
So now you just had to keep just double down and just keep putting it out. But yeah, podcasting, it's just like anything you want to be successful at. It's all about the reps, you know, and you will get better, because I'm the same way. I tell people, please don't listen to season one. Like, don't go back that far, because that was terrible. Like, I didn't know what I was talking about. I was a baffling idiot. Like, I don't even like hearing that. And then and then people go back and they go, it's actually really good, Jordan. And they give me feedback and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm a little harder on myself than I should have been, you know, but we're definitely our own worst critic, and we will judge ourselves, you know, way harder than anybody else will. And so that's, you know,
dang, I'm going to take that one from you, maybe, Jordan, by the way. I like that tip. Yeah. And there was a tip inside the tip. I'm going to be like, so now when I come on here, I'm going to start saying, go back, because you know, some people are haters. For everybody listening, my season one or the beginning was terrible. Go back and listen to that for me. Now we're going to start seeing uploads.
That's in the... Like, yeah, yeah. Send, man, listen, send people back there.
Something, Jordan. That was good. I don't even know if that's why you meant to say it, but I love it. That's I'm gonna nope. get that old catalog's about to get some more downloads because I'm gonna start saying that in every interview.
Here you go. You can call it.
Don't believe
Adam's
me.
Worst
go
hits.
Check it out. Go back to the beginning, Jordan. I was terrible.
Do my top 10 worst podcasts. Just do a series. The top 10 it. Worst podcast episodes. Why not? Hey, listen. If we can make fun of ourselves, then we're doing something right. You know.
Yeah, so, I love it.
I'm a father of six, bro. I'm the most uncool 44-year-old breakdancer on the planet because I have six kids. And it doesn't matter how many head spins or back spins or anything cool I can do, I'm not cool in my house. So they keep me very humble around here. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you got this traction. You got traction with the books. Yeah. You're literally handing out business cards that's producing revenue. Like, how cool is that, right? And then
it's crazy.
You get into
unbelievable.
The media side, and now this thing is starting to have legs. And you start with one show, and now for the audience to hear that you've got eight and you're 6,000 episodes in. So this thing called media has to have continued to add value. So let's talk a little bit about the beginning when you guys first launched show number one, and then the process of getting to eight. And then why would someone maybe think about even going to a second or a third or a fourth or an eighth show?
Well, on our end, I'll tell you, it wasn't by design. So the first show I did, it was, again, it was just tape recordings basically, or on my phone, I upload them, whatever. And we started getting more and more like interest to come on the show. And it got to the point to where at some point, and these are like people that I still want to do business with, like outside of being on a podcast. Like, it's like, man, these are like legit, legit people. Like, I'm like, they want to come on the show. They're like, and a lot of them were California based. Like, these were still, you know, like people I could do business with. And you don't want to say no to a bunch of CEOs that want to be on your show, in my mind. So we kept saying yes. And at some point we had something like, let's say 70 episodes or something, maybe it was 50 to 70 episodes. I forget the exact number that were like scheduled to be released. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? Cause we still got, I looked at my calendar, and just for some context when I was really like in the beginning, like cooking, I had anywhere between 50 to 70 episodes I do a week. So that's every week. So the math, I mean, simple math. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Let somebody on the show and say, by the way, your episode's going to be out in 2 years. Like, that's stupid. Like, they're not even going to know who I am or remember they ever recorded an episode. So I didn't have any answers. And I just told my team, you know what, just release them. And they're like, what? And I'm like, just release them. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, release them when? And I was like, now. And they're like, all of them? I'm like, yeah. And then just go through the rest of our processes. Email the clients, let them know, whatever. And that's that. And something crazy happened. And what happened was, and I don't recommend this for anybody, but I do want them to hear like what happened. And this was the aha moment for me, is that the per episode download went up. That doesn't happen on any other platform, period. Like, if you put out 70 episodes or 70 posts on Instagram, they're going to block you. Put out 70 posts in one day, see what happens. You're going to be shadow banned, or they're just going to say you're spamming and they're going to suspend your account. Do the same thing on Facebook. Do it on any other platform and see what happens. You're going to be blocked, period. That didn't happen. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And for the down, and then for the per episode download to go up, that means that some of those guests must have been sharing it. And introducing their episode to other people, because it's just the math. Or some of those guests heard some other guest episode or whatever it was, but the per episode download went up. So there's only a couple of variations. So I'm like, well, let's see what happens. Let's just keep releasing them as they come in. And then we were just, I mean, the amount of episodes we released a day were just insane. I still don't, I mean, I don't know anybody else that does that. Maybe, I'm sure there's somebody else out there. I don't know all podcasters, obviously, but I know that we were definitely on the top end of releasing new audio and new episodes daily, and we still are. But I was like, I was just amazed. And so then what happens is, over time, we have this huge catalog going. But then I was actually doing an episode with somebody, and they were on the show, and they were like, you know, Adam, money matters, but mission matters too. And man, I'm telling you, it was like God spoke to me through this person. It was like, oh, shit, I'm missing it here. And then I looked at the content, and I was like, you know, afterwards, I was like, well, I'm probably only doing like 20% content that's directly money related. But if you remember, I was a financial advisor before this. So, you know, I thought I was going to build this huge money platform, and I thought the audience was going to come to me for money stuff because that's what I knew. I was wrong. That isn't what my conversations ended up being about most of the time. Some of them were very money, but that was just like maybe 20% maximum. And so I'm like, so I'm off here on this. And I'm like, so then I have this conversation and I talked to the other co-founder. I'm like, Chirag, what do you think about the name Mission Matters? And he's like, yeah, we talk about it. Then we leave it on the table. Then he calls me like 2 weeks later and he's like, Adam, I got an idea. And I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, what if we call the company Mission Matters? And I'm like, great idea. Like I look at it like, man, this is the way I think about God. I have conversations all the time with him. And I'm like, man, you just get that little thing that's putting his head. He didn't even remember the other conversation we had. True story. And so, you know, God just put that idea in his head, Mission Matters. So I'm like, all right, if we're going to do this, if we have enough money in the bank, I know the web domain's already taken. I already know that. So if we have enough money in the bank, we have to buy missionmatters.com. If we can get it, if we can, that's our sign. We'll do it. But if it's for sale, if we have enough money, we're getting it. And he's like, all right, let's do it. And so we see it. It's for sale. I pay more for a web domain than I ever thought I would in my entire life. We bought it. And within 9 days, we rebranded and relaunched everything and lost all our old subscribers, everything, and started brand new. And in doing that process, we segmented the show to what made sense. We looked at other platforms like Forbes and like Yahoo and like all these other ones, and we picked all of the categories that we thought made sense for the type of content that I was doing. So we have a money show, we have a business show, we have a luxury and lifestyle show, we have a fitness show, we have a marketing show, we have a tech show, we have a startup garage show, and we have a fitness show. Those are our main 8 shows. And then I do other shows too and other things just as talent now. Now it's grown and I have, for example, a 2-time Emmy winning producer and show creator. He created the show Chopped. He's pitching shows in New York for me right now. And we're trying to launch some on the networks and streaming and other things like that. So now we're just upping our game. But that was the original idea and how it got to be separated like that. It was really doing an assessment of like what the content was actually coming out like. So I guess you didn't ask this, but I'll just say it as a quick takeaway for anybody that's listening. Is if you find that your show was a very specific niche, but you're having other types of conversation in quantity, you might consider launching another show because you're already doing the work anyway. All we did and what I'm proposing to you, if you're in that situation and you're hearing this, is all we did was it's the same amount of work basically after you launch the show. Obviously, the marketing and stuff like this, putting on your website or however your distribution is, that's more work, yes. So I'm not going to comment on that. But in terms of the work as a host, we still primarily focused our attention on the marketing and everything else on the primary show. And the other shows, we just kind of looked at them almost as repositories for the content. And so, because ultimately you're doing the work anyway. So it's allowing other people to find the content that you're super fans. They'll subscribe to the shows they want. If you're putting them on in quantity, if you're doing a weekly show, it's kind of not the same, probably doesn't apply as much. But if you're doing them in quantity, what I said is completely as applicable today as it was when I did it back then.
Love it. That's such a brilliant idea. And I'm glad that it's paid off. And I think that's really good advice for other people too, because again, why not split it? Because then you essentially get to double down, right? You've essentially created 8 assets from one, right? One turned into 8, and each of those kind of will continue to grow and compound over time. So
it'll feed your creativity too. I'll throw that part out too. It'll feed your creativity and it'll keep it so you're not getting bored. Because that's like, you'll get fatigue, especially if your show's not growing and you've been doing it for a while and you're just like, you'll get some fatigue in there. So that'll also keep you from being bored. Like you'll be like, today I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And you get to have different types of conversations. Like right now we're launching a series in Africa. It's called Africa Forward. And I'm going to be interviewing these African leaders and things like this. And I'll be traveling to Africa in 2026. That keeps
we have to connect on that because I'm helping a client build an African cocoa company. And
oh, that's awesome. So you got to feed your own creativity as a host, right?
You got
you have to have life experiences. If you're sitting in if you're sitting in a studio all day recording constantly and you don't and you're not doing anything else, then it's possible you get burned out. Like, you got to have life experiences too. So that's another big part of podcasting that people should be thinking about.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, events, live, going in person, changing up your environment, you know, that that definitely will get the juices flowing for sure. I love it. I love it. So let's talk a little bit about the revenue side of things, because I'm sure when you first launched the show, the goal was exposure and business development. I guess you could probably put that generalization over it.
No, I wanted to sell some books. I wanted to sell some books. That was what I thought. That's what Chirag told me. He tricked me.
yep. So but let's talk about...
I wasn't that fancy, and I say that, by the way, Jordan, just so you understand, I had no understanding of this business. I didn't even know what that meant, what you're talking about right now. I was a finance guy, and I say that for everybody that's listening. I didn't have strategy or know anything about this. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to get business development. No, I was just like, all right, we're going to sell some books. Like, don't overcomplicate things for everyone else.
Yep. No, I love it. But back then... Obviously, it worked, right? It did drive sales and it did create meetings and opportunities and things like that. Now let's fast forward with 8 shows. Has that changed the revenue? And then what streams?
The whole thing.
What streams has that been able to produce to encourage people that are listening to say, yeah, maybe this is possible for me?
My number one tip is to listen to your audience. Every single product that we've ever created was based off of a need from our audience. So we don't usually miss, like, because now do we have some products and some revenue streams that have succeeded more than others? Yes, if we had some, but we always get some sales. If anything, that might be good and bad in some ways, but the ones that stay, the profit centers that stay, have become solid. And so the first one we'll talk about was the book side. Like, the book side, I didn't really think about doing anthologies or anything like that. The first anthology book, just to be clear, I thought I was just going to do that with some of my buddies that referral partners, and that was it. I was going to do one book. This wasn't supposed to be a business, and I didn't have any intention of doing 400 or publishing 400 plus authors in this series. There was no intention in doing that. But what happened is people would come on the show or they'd hear the show and they knew I had this book out there because I'm trying to sell books, right? Just to promote, right? And then they'd say, hey, when are you doing another one? So... I'm like, and when can we be in one? So that's the first revenue stream that completely, like, and we still do it to this day. We put out 1 to 2 anthology books a year. So that was the first revenue stream. Then we started getting, I got speaking appearances, things like that. That grew pretty naturally for me. And I'm not the best speaker, not the best whatever. If anybody's listening, doesn't believe me, go back to my first episodes on the podcast, listen to them all. Sorry, Jordan, I had to do it. So speaking, that kind of stuff, that kind of came. And I know that's not easy for everyone. So I guess I won't talk too much on that one because some people are into that. Some aren't. Some it comes naturally. Some it doesn't. I'm not a great speaker in all reality. But if you got a check out there and you want to hire me, I will take it and I'm in and I will not let you down. But, you know, the speaking again, that was a big one. And then what happened is other people started asking us, can we help them launch shows? And I didn't want, at first I said the same thing I said when I was in books. I'm like, no, we're not going to help you launch a show. And then, you know, fast forward, now we've launched over 250 shows, and that's grown into its own part of the business. Same thing with events. We do at least 50 plus. I think last year we did 70 plus. I don't have the final number of events over the course of the year, but that became another big part of it. We also have a think tank, so that became another part of it. All of these different, we have a personal brand accelerator. I teach that as well. So that's kind of like your mastermind course. And I think we have a little over 100 people that have been through that now. So all of these things came just from listening to the audience. Like the last book that I wrote, the one that I just released, which is for free, by the way, for all your listeners, billionpodcast.com. You can go there, download a free copy. But that book came out of, for example, what the listeners wanted. And the number one thing that people were telling me is podcasting done? Isn't it saturated? Isn't it this? And I just realized that most people that are in this business, and these are podcasters asking me this question, by the way, when I would come on their shows. For some context for those that are listening, I told Jordan in the warm-up, I said, I just started coming on other people's shows this year. I linked up with podcasters Podmatch. I started using them. That's how we met Jordan. If Jordan has a link and you promote that on their affiliate stuff, definitely I recommend supporting Podmatch and Jordan. He didn't ask me to say that, by the way, but I just really believe in the platform and what they're doing. They really kill it. They've done really well. And like I said, I've been booked on over 100 episodes, 100 shows this year, and got hosts kept on telling me, isn't it saturated? And this. And I'm like, I realized that people, if they ask that question, they don't even understand the industry they're in, which is okay. I was in that place in the beginning too. Like, I didn't understand what I was doing either. So I wrote that book to be kind of like a shortcut. And I'll give you just the quick synopsis or thesis and just one point from the book. My point is that podcasting is just beginning. And so there's only 4 million podcasts, give or take, where you get your data from. There's over 150 million YouTube channels, depending on where you get your data from. Podcasting hasn't even started. We're like in month 6 of YouTube. And one of the big reasons for that is because on the monetization side for YouTube, their original partners program, you put your videos up, you get paid. Like, why? Because there's something called dynamic advertising for those that don't come from the advertising world. And what it means is that they put the ads on the episode for you and take them off and put new ones on there for you. And you don't have to do anything. You just put out new episodes. That's a form of dynamic advertising. That didn't happen in podcasting until pretty recently in terms of how long podcasting's been around. Podcasting's been around over 20 some years in its RSS form in one shape or form. We're talking over 2 decades, but dynamic advertising is fairly new. So in the past, just to juxtapose briefly, in the past, if you launched a podcast, you had baked in ads. That means the host read the ad. If you sold that ad, then you got paid once and you're done. And that episode is dead weight for you. And again, that's for most shows that were small. Dynamic advertising might have existed for the big boys, but that you're a little creator. You're just starting. You're not making a penny. So that didn't exist, whereas YouTube, it did. So now that it does exist, now you have dynamic advertising. You're not stuck with baked in ads. I'm running ads on my without having to do anything on episodes that I did years ago. And so that money can compound over time, but that also keeps you mentally in the game to keep going. My thesis, yep, is that there's going to be 1 billion podcasts one day, that especially think about things like, and I go about into this a little bit more in the book, but like when you think about how easy it is to create them, how much it's becoming, yep, even more easy. You look at other countries like Africa, you look at India, you look at other places that are getting more and more access. There's going to be hundreds of millions of podcasts launch. And for those that are in it right now, like, just think about it as you're in YouTube and in month 6 to year 1. If you knew YouTube was going to have 150 million shows, would you be releasing an episode a week? Heck yeah. So that's where we're at. We're in a gold mine for in terms of podcasting where we're at. And so that's what I write about in the books. People can grab their own copy, and again, free. You can download it for free. And it's a full book. It's not a cheap, no offense to anybody that does this, by the way, because I have them too. But I like to say that it's not a cheap ebook. You're going to get the full book just like you were. You get on Amazon. You could pay for an Amazon, but go get it for free too. Like, unless you like paper, then go on Amazon, whatever. But that's the Love point it. There is that just starting. And that's what I preach on these shows. And that's why I'm guesting, because I want everybody else to be able to benefit from what you've benefited from, Jordan, and from what I've benefited, yeah, from, because it's there for everyone, and it's so cheap. Like, there's no real cost to just getting started.
That's it. No, I love it. Love the tips, love the pointing that out for people and giving people context, because it's usually context that's the differentiator. If we have the context and we execute, it's way different than not having it. And you and I know that from doing it the hard way. You just got to fumbling around and trying to figure it out. But then as you grow and scale and you start producing revenue, yes, it does put a little pep in your step. Yes, it does.
Oh my God.
Make you go, pennies. Pennies. I love this. Yeah. You see anything that's in the positive, and you're more excited to record that next episode and reinvest in the show and getting better equipment. And
natural. You can only do a hobby for so
evolution.
Long.
100%.
I want to get people that are podcasters out of that. The current podcasters that are already started, I want to get them out of hobby status and into, I can create generational wealth for my family if I pay attention to this, and if I just have a little bit more knowledge and execute. That's all it is, knowledge gap. And for those that want to start a podcast but think it's like maybe too late or or is it saturated? Nobody has a podcast. Nobody's even, most people don't even know what a podcast is. Whether you understand that or not, that is reality. That's the truth, and that's the numbers, and there's a ton of money to be made on this wave that's going to happen as these shows keep growing.
Yeah. Yeah, for those of, that are listening and don't know, Netflix is building a almost billion-dollar place in New Jersey, and one of the areas that they're going to be focusing on, and same with Amazon, is what? Podcasts, creators, right? So you are not too late. In fact, you're pretty early. Like Adam said, you're early to the game. You just got to put one foot in front of the other and think about something that you can add value to. I mean, that's really what it is it's adding value to people, building relationships, storytelling, like you said. And there is so much that can come from, you know, just putting that one foot in front of the other. And I love what you said about the anthologies that you did, because my first book, it was a 10-author co-collaboration project called Brand Sharks. And I was voted least likely to succeed in high school. So the fact that I could actually pay some money and become an author, like I was like, all right, Mrs. Green, wait till you see this. Your boy is an author. And what's cool about it, and I'm sure the similar for you, is it gave me confidence. It's like, man, I'm an author now. Like I can actually do this. Yeah. I can write. I can, people will pay for the words that I write. And then so this July, I just released my first solo book, which is called The Life-Changing Power of Adversity, How to Overcome Struggles, Unlock Your Potential, and Blaze Your Own Trail to Success. Yeah. And this is really where I share, I mean, being beaten and falsely arrested by police at 12, that sucked. Being stung by 53 bees in fourth grade and surviving. Being in a near-fatal accident at 19, almost losing my right leg. First kid was a miscarriage and having six healthy babies later. So there are so many things that life throws at us. It's all about how do we react? How do we respond? How do we learn to not be a victim of our circumstance and leverage the things that happened to us and shift our mindset to say, this happened for me, so that I can look through a new lens and I can help other people get through it. And so that's something I'm passionate about, is helping people realize that adversity gives us strength and it enables us to see through a lens that no one's going to be able to see through. And the quicker we can realize that it's coming, we don't know when it's going to happen, but how do we reshift our mindset? To me, that's where the real unlock happens. And it sounds like for you, although your mindset kept telling you that you didn't want to do it or you couldn't do it, there was someone in your corner that kept saying, hey, let's at least attempt it. And you went out and put that foot in front of the other and made it happen. So kudos to you for the success that you've had so far. But I know for you and your head, it's just the beginning. You're just getting started. And so what I'd love to do as we close out here is, if you can give our audience, you know, maybe there's someone listening that's like, 2026 is my year, Adam. It's my year, Jordan. I want to launch this podcast. What would be the first three things you would tell somebody as they're having these thoughts roll around their head and they want to get a show launched?
Yeah. Well, that's what I wrote the book for. And not to sound too self-promotional on a book, but just to be clear, 9 years to write that book, over 6,000 episodes, launched hundreds of shows. I put all the knowledge in there. But I'll give you a couple of tips from the book. So just briefly. So the first one was, in terms of getting started, like all you need is your first idea. And understand it's going to evolve. Like when we started on the first site, and you can work at your own pace. Like that's the main thing, is that when we started our first show, I did over 1,500 interviews before I even did video. I was so scared. And the book I talk about, like we have some friends and I'm like, man, I'm the world's worst podcaster. And I used to say it all the time. And everybody'd be like, man, one of my buddies, Matt Ford, which I talk about in the book, he says, I'm going to buy that domain. I'm going to put your picture on there. That's going to be your fan club. And it's because I was so scared. Like my very, very first show, Jordan, I didn't even use my real name. I was deathly afraid that somebody would know it was me. Like, think about that for a second. For anybody that's listening, like, I didn't do video until after 1,500 episodes. So if you can get on a Zoom, or if you can get on Riverside, like we're on right now recording this, or if you can be in front of a camera and do that, I used to forget my name if you did that. So if you can do that, you're already better and further off than I was when I started. So you can 100% do it. And if you can't do that, I started with only audio. Again, over 1,500 episodes, we built an audience. So you can work at your own pace. And I talk about that in the books. Don't judge yourself on that one. The second thing is set realistic expectations. Most people have the incorrect concept of what this business actually is and what this format actually is. And I'll give you the numbers I break down in the book. You get, let's say you get 100 downloads on an episode, and let's say you have an hour-long episode. That's 600 minutes of somebody's life that they dedicated to listening to you instead of watching a show on Netflix or something else that might have cost $1 million, or if they're watching a movie like Avatar that could have cost billions to create. Instead of that, they're listening to you. So respect that and don't compare it to things like, let's say you get 1,000 likes on Instagram. Would you rather have 1,000 likes on Instagram or 100 downloads from a dedicated audience? Me, I'd rather the 100 downloads and a dedicated audience, which, by the way, not ragging on Instagram. We do pretty well on Instagram. Ask Adam Torres. You'll see the whole thing. We put out a ton of content and our audience is loyal there. But I know that 1,000 likes, they didn't watch that like 1 minute video I put. Like, how many people actually watched that? They just put a quick little heart. Doing a quick little heart, that doesn't build a fan. That builds somebody that is like that 100 people that are listening to your show. That's the ones that you want to focus on. So don't compare stats from one platform to another to gauge your success. If you got 10 people listening to your show, man, you better freaking find out who those 10 people are and build with them, because you can build a freaking empire from those 10 people. Like, that's the difference between a podcast and any other platform, in my opinion, is audio special. It's different. They're taking you with them. They're listening to you when they're taking their kids to school. They're listening to you as their last thing before they go to bed. If they're listening to you with their earbuds and they've literally invited you into their body, like, you got earbuds in your ears and your voice is vibrating in their head. Like, so do not do that. Like, set right expectations and understand that this is a marathon, not a sprint. And then the last thing is, I call this the Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting. So for those of you though that know the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I got to bring this one up for you, Jordan, because you got kids. So, you know, the porridge, was it too hot? Was it just right? Or was it, you know, or was it too cold? If you set your schedule properly for podcasting, so this is what happens, and this is my feedback after you know, launching hundreds of shows for clients, and then again, as a podcaster myself, doing thousands of episodes. So again, it's the Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting. So what happens is this: if your business is going really well, what happens? It's too hot. So you're going to quit podcasting. And the reason you're going to quit is because you don't have time. You got to focus on your business, because your business is what's making you money. And that's what you got to do right now, because it might not last. So it's too hot. You know, your podcast is too hot, or the porridge is too hot. Let's say that it's too cold. You're losing business. And now everything is about, I'm paying rent, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So what happens then? You quit your podcast again. So why do you quit? Because now I don't have enough business. I can't focus on this podcast right now. I got to focus on feeding my family. Too cold. So what does your podcast have to be? It has to be just right. Your life has to be just right. Nothing has to happen. You have to have no failure. You have to have not too much business, not too little business. You get where I'm going, Jordan? There's no chance that your podcast is going to survive. So how do you get yourself out of that Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting? What you do is you just create a schedule that matches your lifestyle and stick to it. So if you're going to record, I'd rather somebody does one episode a month and commit to doing that for the rest of their life, notice I said that, then for them to do one episode a day and burn out in a year and then be another person that just says, oh yeah, I remember I used to be a podcaster. I used to have a podcast. Yeah, that thing didn't work. No, you didn't work. You were in the pot. You were in the Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting. That's what happened. So don't even play that game. Set up a schedule that you can maintain for the rest of your life. One episode a month, great. Two episodes a month, even better. Three, okay. Four, can you do that for the rest of your life? if things get bad, if you have one of these terrible things happen to you, like you mentioned, Jordan, that have happened, that some of the things you mentioned in your book, would you still be able to do your show? If not, then do less episodes. It's fine. Put yourself on a life path and integrate it into your lifestyle. So those are my top three from the book, 1billionpodcast.com.
Love it. Love it. Love the tips. So much value. I know our audience is going to get tremendous value from your story, from your journey. You know, folks, if you didn't think you could do a podcast before you started hearing the sound of Adam's voice, the guy didn't even want to do one. So if he can do it and build a business,
I don't know if I want to do one, but it's in my lifestyle.
Still doesn't know. The verdict is still out there, folks. 1500 episodes, and episodes recorded. He still doesn't know if he wants to do it, but he's made it into multiple businesses. So if that doesn't encourage you in a funny way, then I don't know what will. 1billionpodcast.com. Make sure you all go and grab the book. And then where's just another place that you'd want folks to connect with you? I know they're going to get value out of this.
Instagram. Instagram's the easy one. Everything that I do is on Instagram. I rag on it just because I think it gets too much credit when it comes to building an audience. Like, those are passive fans. Some, okay, great, whatever. There's a small percentage. That's the algorithm. And 10% of your followers are going to see your content. Nothing like a podcast. But I do a lot on Instagram for those that like Instagram. And I personally like Instagram not for business necessarily as much, but I just enjoy the platforms. Ask Adam Torres on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, hey folks, make sure you go run to the website, 1billionpodcast.com. Grab a copy of it. Matter of fact, if you have heard someone in your sphere of influence that says, hey, maybe I should start a podcast, send the link to them too. He's on a mission to helping folks not only start podcasts, but turn it into a business. And Adam and I believe that if we can do it, you can do it. This knucklehead, least likely to succeed, and a guy that was in finance and had no interest, if we can do it, you can surely do it. So thanks so much, Adam, for taking the time to come on the Blaze Your Own Trail podcast. Any final thoughts for the audience?
You rock, Jordan, man. Appreciate all you're doing and keep it up. And congrats again on your new book. Everybody go get a copy of that thing. And I'm so proud just to know you. So congrats on sharing your story to help others.
I appreciate it, my friend. Have an awesome day and happy holidays to you.